You can't tell the players without a scorecard, so we're providing you with the scorecard next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Good to be back with you, Barry. It's good to be talking about the things we're talking about.
And what we're talking about today, Charles, is Volume 2 of our Presidential Republican Primary scorecard. In other words, we're going to list all the players, not just the ones that the major media want us to pre-select, which would be what they consider to be the 16 candidates that have formally announced their candidacy that they've actually paid any attention to, running from Jeb Bush all the way down to our own John Kasich in Ohio. We're looking at all of the candidates who have filed. Now, do you know, Chuck, this is an interesting statistic off the website, that as of right now, there are over 500 people who have formally declared and were filed to run for president of the United States under various political party affiliations or as independents.
Well, I was just digging around for fun on this website, and I went over to our old stomping ground. Barry and I used to serve in the Constitution Party to kind of give away some of our past. And I'm looking at it, and I don't recognize anybody on there except one of the potential candidates. And that's Chuck Baldwin, who ran 4 years ago. No, 8 years ago. And was the vice presidential candidate in 2004. And, yeah, not so much. So, as usual, some of these 500 people, You've never heard of, unless you're their next-door neighbor or work for them or work with them, and you will never hear of them again.
All right, and we're going to start right away because we've still got about 20 left to do, folks. There are 32 announced Republican candidates for president. Again, when you looked at Fox on Friday night, all you saw were, well, the top 10 on Friday night. If you were paying any attention or got the feed or the cable access for the afternoon, then you got to see the other six that Fox believed are considered to be the legitimate candidates. And they use that term. I don't, because
right.
I believe anybody who files is legitimately a candidate. It's just a question of, do you legitimately have a shot of getting a nomination?
And which can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. In other words, very often the people they say who aren't quote-unquote legitimate candidates are candidates that can't get any FaceTime on the networks, and they can't get any FaceTime on the networks because the networks say they're not electable.
Well, and here we're going to continue on with this list. And okay, folks, just remember, even some of the ones that the networks believe are electable probably aren't. So,
yeah.
Okay, so we're going to continue on. We left off last time with Lindsey Graham, and we talked a little bit about Lindsey Graham. And so now we're going through our alphabetical list. And our next Republican presidential candidate is Jim Hayden, who is a business owner and veterans advocate from Anderson County, Tennessee. Now, his big issue is the woeful condition of the Veterans Administration and especially the VA hospitals. And he said that he wants to give former and current soldiers an advocate in the White House. And he also wants to cut the size of government by about at least 75% and get rid of all federal departments and agencies. Okay, I'd love to see that happen, but I don't think that's going to happen in one presidential term.
Yeah, there are some, of course, that you can't do without. I mean, the State
right.
Department. I don't think we want to get rid of the State Department. We want to reform it. Yeah, this is the problem. I find myself drawn to this guy in that some of the stuff lower down on the list.
Mm-hmm.
He basically wants he's pro-life.
Yep.
The Constitution provides protections at conception. He's correct. He would allow the states to determine their own gay marriage and marijuana laws. Well, that's a very constitutional way of viewing it.
It is.
Those are not federal things. Those are state things.
They are.
As much as I'd like to see the states say no to gay marriage and to marijuana, at least from a recreational standpoint, I'm with him.
Yep. Okay, our next candidate is Chris Hill. Mr. Hill is a former combat pilot and an airline captain, and he was born in Clinton, Indiana, but currently resides, I believe, in New Hampshire. Graduated Air Force ROTC, combat pilot during the first Iraq War, honorably discharged in 1993, and he's a commercial pilot for UPS. So, Chuck, when they start losing your packages, if Chris Hill becomes president, you've got somebody you can call.
Yeah, right.
Okay. But basically, Chris Hill is what I call the modern fugue Republican candidate. Because he wants to say that, you know, he's a Republican, but he is championing a living wage plan, require mandatory wages determined by a person's age and the average cost of living. So all private employers would be forced by the government to pay certain ways. Sort of sounds like minimum wage out in, Oregon and Washington State.
And California and other places, yeah, that are going to that $15 an hour minimum.
Yep.
Wait till you buy your first $7 hamburger at McDonald's.
Oh, absolutely. And basically, he wants to. He's a pro-union Republican and supports the Teamsters. He's tolerant, whatever that means, of gay marriage. And so, he says that religious institutions should never be required to perform ceremonies to which they morally object, but the government should legally recognize same-sex unions to heterosexual couples in the light of the Constitution's silence on the issue. So, in other words, if the Constitution's silent, then government can play in the fields of the Lord, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. That is a deeply flawed viewpoint.
He's for conservation, against the war on drugs, and wants term limits on the legislative and judicial branches of government. So,
and we've discussed the problems with term limits in the past.
Well, he is strong. He's a strong supporter of Second Amendment gun rights, according to himself. And that his policy positions are comfortably centrist. And so, he probably would not ever make it to the presidency, but he could end up becoming somebody's United States Senator if he keeps it up.
This is the kind of guy who ends up in the cabinet as the head of the Veterans Administration.
Or something of that nature, yes. All right, our next declared candidate, and boy did he ever declare, is the former governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee. We've spent no little amount of time on this program talking about our viewpoints on Mike Huckabee.
Tax hike Mike.
Well, there's that too. I have to say that it seems to me that anytime Mike Huckabee announces a run for president, it usually means that he's got a new book coming out. and I'm sorry if I'm offending people who like Mike Huckabee who listen to this program, but let's look at his record. Now, again, I don't think as governor he can claim his policy positions until you veto something. When you start vetoing things, that's when you're showing where
your
policy
is. That's when you show where your policy is. Yeah. And Mike doesn't have a really good record on any number of positions. He is all for state intervention in places that state should not be intervening. And unfortunately, he does what is becoming very normalized these days, and that is citing his faith as an excuse for intervening in places where the state has no right to intervene.
Right. Now, he will say that he's a fiscal conservative, pushing a $90 million tax cut package through the Arkansas legislature.
Tax cut packages are the same way they run here. You cut the income tax or some other form of tax while you're raising other taxes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Ask people in Arkansas what they thought about his raising the tax on things like diesel fuel and heating oil.
Yep.
And any number of things which actually amounted to they'll call it a revenue increase. It's a tax increase. The same way, basically, you slough it off on somebody else. That's how Mike, quote unquote, cut taxes.
Right, and he's also he has been supportive of the Common Core State Standards Initiative before he was opposed to it. So, Mike's been flip flopping on that issue. He's never been a big friend of the homeschooling community, although for some reason, many in the homeschooling community has never figured that out, and they gleefully support him, which has always been surprising to me, considering how bad his record was in Arkansas on issues related to home education. So anyhow, that's Mike Huckabee, somewhat perennial candidate now. Another governor from the state of Louisiana is Bobby Jindal. Now, Bobby Jindal And let's go ahead and get it out there right now. It's Piyush Subhash Chandra Amit Jindal. Okay? That is his full name. All right? Let's now give it a rest, okay?
Not a single Robert in there, is there?
Great to call him Bobby. I don't care.
I don't care, yeah.
But political opponents made a big issue of somehow he was denying his heritage or trying to hide from the American people that he's Indian. I'm not sure from looking at a picture of Bobby Jindal that he's going to have a lot of success hiding from the American public that he is of Indian descent.
Yeah,
and I don't mean Native American.
How he would hide it, I don't know. There's an old Eddie Murphy bit on Saturday Night Live, if you remember. They did a takeoff on Black Like Me, and it was called White Like Me.
Uh-huh.
Bobby Jindal is not doing that. Eddie Murphy came out in whiteface. And if you've not seen the bit, go to YouTube. Look for White Like Me, Eddie Murphy. It's hilarious. But Jindal is an interesting character. I mean, you can tell that he is a conservative, and one of the ways you can tell he is a conservative is that the media hates him.
Uh-huh.
And the progressives hate him. I have been listening occasionally to progressive radio, and I remember when Jindal announced. And basically the one thing they could come up with was the fact that he picked the name Bobby after watching the Brady Bunch.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That was their big cut down. I'm like, well, if that's what you got, I guess you got to run with it, because if really that's your reasoning for rejecting him as a candidate, that's pretty dumb.
Uh-huh.
I've known plenty of Asian people who come here and take Americanized names. My answer to that is, so what? It's easier to say a name you're familiar with than it is to say a name you're not familiar with. And Piyush Subhas Chandra Amrit is difficult to get out.
Yeah, could you imagine the length of the bumper sticker you'd have to put on? Well, okay, but Jindal has got some political background. He ran for governor originally in 2003 against Kathleen Blanco and only lost on the second ballot by 4%. And that was when he first ran. He was 32 years old. He finished first in an open primary, but lost the runoff to Blanco, who then was the governor during Hurricane Katrina,
yes.
I believe. So,
yeah.
So maybe that was God putting him to the side for
and
a
completely
bit.
Mishandled it.
And completely mishandling it. Now, he then ran for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives and won with a 71.7% margin of victory. Chuck, I mean, that was a 80-20 race or a 90-10 race. But then he capped it by 2 years later winning his reelection by a margin of 80.74%.
Despite staunch sort of Eastern elitist attempts to get him thrown out.
Exactly.
You know, if you listen to the NPR crowd, he's Satan incarnate.
Yeah, well, that's true. Now, Jindal has been no wilting lily when it comes to major issues of social import. He is very strong pro-life. He's very strong on marriage. As a matter of fact, I believe he was the first governor, maybe the first governor, who actually directed the probate judges in his state not to issue marriage licenses for homosexual couples.
Yeah, good for him.
And so he's been strong on those issues. And we're going to hear more about Bobby Jindal because he is one of those, what we call the first 16 in this list. He will be on the Friday stage at Fox. I believe he's on the top stage on the night thing, unless they can find a way to get him down to the second stage. Our next one, another governor. Man, we've just got governor after governor after governor here. In other words, none of them have anything unique to say because, well, they've all been governors of states where they've done interesting things. This one's no exception, John Kasich from Ohio.
Oh, he's definitely done interesting things.
John Richard Kasich, born in McKees Rock, Pennsylvania, which he'll let you know, and has then moved on to become a state level. He ran for Congress. He was in Congress. He'll say that he balanced the federal budget, although if you really dig into that, you'll find out that that's probably, shall we say, being a little generous with the facts.
He balanced the budget there the same way he balanced the budget in Ohio, and that is kick the can down the road by changing the rules of how the debt is counted. And so basically left grandchildren with a much larger bill than they would have had had he not done those things.
Yep. And, of course, he's been governor of Ohio, just reelected last year for his second term. And has had, at least for folks who are listening in our listening audience, they know an awful lot about John Kasich. If they've been listening to our program, they know an awful lot about John Kasich, because it seems like we talk about him on a fairly regular basis, mainly because he says things like, I have the right to determine what conservatism is in Ohio, yeah. I have the right to determine what Republican policy is in Ohio, etc. And invoking God every time he wants to move a leftist social welfare program. Now, Chuck, I'm in favor of helping the poor. I'm in favor of lifting people up out of poverty. I'm in favor of helping those who can't help themselves. I'm not in favor of a politician coming and telling me that God's going to get me if I don't allow him to expand Medicaid and put the state in a $13 billion potential future hole to do so, especially when they're not fixing the Medicaid problem that they have to start with.
Now, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I'm going to leave that on the table. He's also basically said that he's balanced the Ohio budget, got us out of an $8 billion shortfall. Okay, yes, Ted Strickland did leave this state in an $8 billion hole. Yes, that hole was closed up under John Kasich's administration. Point is, if you look, we've increased spending under John Kasich every budget. As a matter of fact, spending is higher now under John Kasich than it ever was under any of Ted Strickland's budgets. Is that a result of inflation, Chuck?
No.
Or is it a result of inflated ego?
Inflated ego.
Okay, very well could be. So, Kasich is really, he wants to be a conservative, but his policies and his positions are more in the moderate camp.
Yeah, to say the least, moderate. I like the characterization in here that he, quote-unquote, strongly favored a labor law that would have imposed harsh strictures on collective bargaining rights in his state. Well, that's the same thing that Scott Walker did, and in fact, Kasich did not favor it. It was forced upon him by people who wanted to politically embarrass him in his own party, and it was not popular. It lost 61-39. It should have been more popular than it was, but The unions put tons and tons and tons, tens of billions of dollars into, and the national unions came out and campaigned against it, and the timing was terrible on this thing. So blaming him for that, yeah, he signed it, but he didn't really want it.
No, that's true. Well, now we're moving from a list of governors to a list of what I call folks on the second 16 tour. And our next candidate is Michael Kinlaw, who is from Texas. And he considers himself a conservative and a Tea Party supporter. And basically, says he's going to start campaigning around the country to increase his name recognition. Well, good for him.
Yeah.
It's the first of the second 16 candidates that I've actually seen that actually has a plan to actually get out and try to get their name recognition.
Rub palms.
That's not dumb, okay? But basically he says that he's the, quote, only person running for office that's an average citizen, unquote. Well, that may be in his favor.
Whatever that means.
Takes tough stances on immigration, gun rights, federal spending, and foreign policy, and warns that, and I like this quote, illegal aliens are here illegally, unquote.
Yes.
Well, really? Okay, good.
Well,
good.
Yeah, but that is a counter to the idea that illegals are merely undocumented citizens,
right.
Undocumented immigrants.
Yeah, and Kinlaw sounds pretty good until you get to this last part in this bio, that he is a, you know, fiscal and social conservative, a staunch fiscal and social conservative, with the exception being that he supports gay marriage.
Libertarian
viewpoint there. So there you have it on Michael Kinlaw. Next is Bartholomew James Lower. I really do like the name Bartholomew.
Yes.
That's good. I actually would use that instead of the Lower on your bumper stickers, probably, because it would pop out more. Basically, we really don't know much about Mr. Lower, except that he really wants to have a magnetic railway system that could be piloted remotely, cutting down on traffic congestion. In other words, he would all be for light rail and or the 3C corridor idea of Ted Strickland's.
Well, the hole on rails into which you pour money.
The hole on rails in which you pour money. That's right. He's a great aggressive opponent of solar power utilization and thinks that we should use it to run advanced indoor hydroponic farms that would be 100 times more productive than traditional farms and grow organic food of a superior nutritional value.
Crunchy Con.
Another Crunchy exactly. Con. Believes in a national sales tax and opposed his Common Core. So that he's the first candidate so far who has put that out there on his website or in his information. And basically thinks that it's not a war anymore and it's an extermination. So he believes in a very hard stance on the war on drugs. And he avoids stating his position on abortion.
Libertarian.
Yeah, okay.
A crunchy con, as we said.
There we go again. So here we go. Folks, and you find out that this is a lot of times because many libertarians realize that there's really not much they can do within their own party because they'll never get anywhere. And, you know, my apologies to any libertarians take offense at that. But
well, we're libertarians. We're small L.
Yeah, we're not big L party libertarians, so... Okay, our next in the second 16 is K. Ross Newland, and raised in Michigan, Chuck. So you might understand some of the things. He's a graduate from Barbizon Modeling School, and so and has been okay. A golf pro, and is a pastor in Rockford, Illinois. Now he's a self-professed quote Jesus freak fanatic unquote. Okay. All right. Okay. He bases the majority of his political platform on the premise that there are actually very few things that the government should do and very few problems that it can fix. Okay, I give him that.
Amen, brother.
He strongly encourages the practice of religious tithing as a means of empowering the church to address social ills.
Amen.
Got to say that that's okay, too. If all Americans who claim to be Christians, and that's 70%, Chuck, that's the number right now that claim to be Christians, were to tithe the 10% of their income, which he states regretfully only some 3% currently do. So if the other 67% would get in the game, the Christian church would have more money than the government. And you know what? He's probably right.
He's right. The book, Tithing Your Way to Victory and those kinds of things.
Tithing and Dominion, yeah.
Yeah, Tithing and Dominion.
Yes.
They're
huge. And so basically that the church could then take over the things that the government's trying to do, which is taking care of the poor and meeting the needs. He basically says that his political views are conservative and largely libertarian, supports a flat tax and a national sales tax, reduce corporate taxation, advocates an end to lifetime pay for elected representatives. I believe I would agree with that. I don't believe that anybody, once they've retired, should get lifetime pay at basically the rate that they were making. That's the problem we're having with state employee pensions because
exactly.
They're way too generous. So basically he has this whole idea of taking the power away from the government by and large and giving it to the church through voluntary tithing. Okay, K. Ross Newland, Jesus freak fanatic. Okay, I wish him well, and I hope that even if he doesn't make it in the presidential sphere, that his idea will maybe take fire in the church and encourage people to tithe more. Okay, our next one in the second 16 again, and we're getting to some of the top 16 guys. We're coming down. We're in the O's now. Is Esteban Oliveras.
And believe it or not, I've heard of this guy.
You have?
And you know why I heard of him?
No.
Because I have a YouTube account, and I went out to YouTube, and he was a featured advertiser on YouTube, and he had this video that's embedded in this page at the top. So I actually watched part of it, so I knew who he was.
Okay, so basically, you know, he resides in Austin, Texas, and doesn't give much about his background, but he has been working since the age of 7. When he worked as a busboy in his parents' restaurant. He describes the business's closing 3 years later as the first time he was laid off, and as well as the first and only time he hugged his boss in consolation. basically believes in equality, that all Americans should have the same access to education without preferential placement. Believes in using technology for education. Yeah, this all sounds good. Frustrated with the stock market, believes a very small sales tax on financial trading orders is in order. but wants to reform the tax codes. In other words, he wants to reduce income taxes and increase other taxes in order to balance. And is generally a left-leaning candidate, and so basically they don't talk about some of his social issues because he probably doesn't talk about them. So, you know, even though you've seen him on YouTube, you still don't know a whole lot more about Esteban.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up.
Exactly. Even though he's out there on YouTube, you don't know much about him, which means, and we're going to be talking about populism here shortly as we get to a couple of other candidates. But that's what he's basically running on, as a populist standpoint of trying to get hits on YouTube. Here's another guy who might want to consider getting hits on YouTube because he's probably not getting hits anywhere else. And this is, oh gosh, Chuck, where do I put this guy? Is he top 16? Is he second 16?
Everybody's heard of him, but almost nobody is supporting him. So I would say
he's our bridge guy. He's the guy who is barely hanging on by the skin of his fingernails to the top 16, and he really should be in the second 16.
Okay, he's the one that everybody's heard of, will be one of the first ones out.
Probably so. And he's a former governor, Charles. It's George Pataki of New York. Yes, that's right. Former Governor George Pataki, the man who spoke at the Republican National Convention in both 2008 and 2012, if I remember correctly, is jumped in again to want to run for president. Now, he was the mayor of Peekskill, New York. He served in the New York State Assembly, the New York State Senate. Then he became the governor when he defeated Mario Cuomo as governor in 1994. Well, if you remember, Cuomo was having some significant issues at that point.
Oh, major issues, yes.
And not only that he was being governor for life, this was Cuomo's going for his fourth term. When Pataki ran out, Pataki thought that was too long, and he swore to serve only two terms.
Yeah, right.
And ended up serving three
terms. Yeah,
I guess once he got in there, he realized that the seat in Albany was a little bit more comfortable than he thought.
Well, he had to undo all the damage that Cuomo had done.
Yeah. Now it's interesting, Chuck, because he lauds himself as a solid fiscal conservative, which means that he was very lonely and didn't have many friends in New York State as governor because, refresh my memory, did New York implement huge tax cuts and across-the-board provisions?
Okay, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because the New York legislature is not noted for its conservative nature.
No, it's not.
And the governor, like a president, is a servant, essentially, of his legislature. You know, you can't, despite the current president's attempts, you really can't just start signing executive orders to get this, that, and another thing done. And tax cuts is one of those things. They did some tax cutting in New York. I would say modest. It wasn't huge.
Modest is right.
But it wasn't tiny either.
No, it wasn't. Now,
and they had to because they were in
deep fiscal crisis.
Desperate financial straits thanks to, in part, to Mario
Cuomo. Yeah, that's right. Now, the other side of the coin on Pataki is of the top tier 16 candidates, he is the only candidate who is verbally pro-abortion. He's also verbally and solidly pro-gay marriage, forcing a piece of legislation through the New York State Legislature through pressure and intimidation to legalize gay marriage in the state of New York.
Can you say Mitt Romney?
Well, yeah, I can say that, yes. Okay, so Pataki is not going to win any conservative votes. Let's just put it that way. As a matter of fact, he's probably not going to win too many GOP e-votes either, which is the reason why he's barely hanging on to the top tier 16 by the skin of his fingernails.
Exactly.
All right, another candidate also in the top tier 16, but who is taking some serious flack from people in his ideological camp right now, is the junior senator from Kentucky, Rand Paul. Now, Rand Paul is taking flack mainly from libertarians because, and shock, I'm sure, to them to realize, he's not his father.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure why they thought that he was going to be a clone of Ron Paul.
Rand is not Ron.
And God bless him for not being Ron. You know, if he were just parroting the exact same positions that Ron Paul talked about during his entire career, I would have to wonder, is Rand Paul somebody who has any ideas of his own?
Right.
And really, he's showing that he's, now again, he's also fairly shrewd as a politician, Chuck. You've got to give him some credit. You know, he really, he started as, I believe he's an optometrist.
Ophthalmologist.
Ophthalmologist. I always get those two confused. He's an ophthalmologist. So he started as an ophthalmologist and, of course, the son of Ron Paul, who became a cult following during his run in the both the 2008 and the 2012 presidential races. And, of course, he goes all the way back to when he ran for the Libertarians in, what, 1992, I believe, was Ran Paul, or 88. It was 88 he
88.
Ran. 88 that Ron Paul ran as a Libertarian, and then when he lost, you know, as a Libertarian, he then became a Republican and ran for Congress and served, what was it, 14 terms in the...
Yeah, and...
No, it wasn't 14, it was...
I forget now.
Okay, so he served in the 90, Congress...
92 through...
He served like...
14?
Yeah, something of that nature. So he served quite...
That would be 22.
Yeah.
That would be 11 terms.
11 terms. Thank you. Okay, my math was off. But Rand has been the United States Senator from Kentucky by beating the Kentucky Secretary of State in the primary and then beat Jack Conway, the Attorney General, in the general election. Now, a lot of the PACs and folks who worked for Rand Paul were the folks who were involved around his father's campaign. And that's great. And most of those folks really were fairly hardcore libertarians, Chuck. I know some of these guys. Yeah, they're conservative on this issue and that, but they're not across the board
right.
conservative on every issue. But they've been concerned about Rand Paul because he is striking them as being too cozy with the establishment. Which you and I have discussed this before.
Right. He's very good at cozying up and then saying, so sorry, not playing.
Yeah.
Well, he knows how to play the game because he watched what they did to his father, which was
right.
unconscionable.
For 20 plus years,
yes.
He watched what they did to his father.
So he decided he wasn't going to get played like that. He's a little more... I don't even know the word I'm looking for. He's not duplicitous, but he's a little more stealthy about how he plays the game.
He's cagey.
Yes.
He's cagey about it. Now, you know, if he ran in 2010 for this race, so that means next year in 2016, he's going to be running for re-election as a United States Senator and for president. Now, you can do that at the federal level.
Yeah.
Ask Joe Biden. Who ran on the vice president
that's
and
right.
was still running to hold it until the point that he got the nomination and looked like he was going to win. He was going to be the United States Senator.
Well, Democrat candidate from Delaware for Senate is a shoe-in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes. Now, not maybe so much in Kentucky, but I'm not sure how much...
Kentucky's a weird state. My sister lives there, and I kind of watch what's going on there. It's a very strange mix. It's sort of rural versus urban. And when I say urban, Louisville and Lexington versus the rest of the state, sort of like here,
yeah.
Cincinnati, Columbus, Cleveland, Toledo, Youngstown versus the rest of the state.
Right.
So, Kentucky's one of those split states. You never know for sure what's going to happen. And, you know, Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, I mean, people were incensed when Rand Paul came out and endorsed Mitch McConnell for re-election. No, that's Paul playing the game.
That's smart politics.
That's right, because McConnell stuck a knife in his back when he was running against...
Grayson. In the Republican primary. Yes.
Trey Grayson in the Republican Party. And... basically, Rand Paul basically steamrolled him, and then McConnell came out and said, okay, you got the endorsement.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's payback. This is the same reason why Sarah Palin always comes out and defends John McCain.
Exactly. It's a dirty side of politics, but that's what it is. But that's going to – that is kind of hurting Paul with the conservatives, and then he – coming out to appease conservatives by talking about where he stands on certain issues like abortion, gay rights, etc., which have been, by and large, from what I've seen, fairly
mainstream conservative. Yeah.
Angers his libertarian supporters.
Exactly.
And so, really, he's kind of in one of those Darned if I do and darned if I don't kind of situations.
You'll notice that they don't talk much about his marijuana position because it's probably more like the libertarian position. And they also don't talk much. Here's the deal. Where Christian conservatives don't like him? Foreign policy. They really don't like his foreign policy even a little.
And in that, he is just like his father, Ron Paul.
And unfortunately, here's the problem with that. It's the biblical foreign policy is Ron Paul's, and he's close to his dad. And that is diplomacy and friendliness for everybody unless they, you know, the hand of friendship and trade, unless they stab you in the hand, in which case, then no friendliness. I understand where that foreign policy comes from. He's not, Rand Paul is definitely not a war drum beater like a number of foreign policies that you'll see out there. So, but they know that the Republican base for some reason is rabidly, pro-war in some circles, which really doesn't make any sense to me, but whatever. Maybe we need to do a show on that one day. But yeah, Rand Paul is in an interesting position because normally the flack that he would be normally getting at this point is being taken by Donald Trump. Donald Trump's taking all the heat that Rand Paul would normally take. And I'm not sure it's actually good for Rand Paul. He liked being the guy that drew all the heat because he knew how to handle it.
Yep,
he did a pretty good job with it. So, there you go.
Okay, well, our next candidate in the long list is Rick Perry, the former governor of Texas. Rick, be with me. Count the three here, okay? Because when Rick ran for presidential nomination in 2012, his entire campaign was derailed when he talked about he wanted to eliminate three federal agencies specifically, and they could only count to two.
Yeah.
Okay, it's an honest mistake.
It's one of those things.
You're under pressure,
and
your brain shuts down. Okay, I've had it happen to me before. You take a mulligan on it. Okay, just say, you know, guys,
I've spaced it.
I just had a senior moment. Then, of course, you say that in politics,
you're done.
You upset an entire other demographic. But Rick Perry was the longest-serving governor in Texas history. Served 3.5 terms in office and then decided to run for president in 2012, where he basically blew up his own campaign with the lack of being able to count to three. And he has been considered a significant social conservative and has done a number of things to push pro-life issues in the state of Texas. You know, basically during this campaign, I am guessing that Rick Perry is going to be very much more circumspect and careful about how he says things so that he doesn't have another one of these moments where I can't count to three.
Yeah, exactly. Rick Perry is a real mixed bag. He basically came out and sort of was insulting to the Tea Party at the wrong time.
That's true.
He's been wrong on Common Core.
That's true.
He's been wrong on a number of issues in which he suddenly, as Senator Everett Dirksen famously said, when we feel the heat, we see the light.
Exactly.
And he felt the heat and he saw the light. Well, you have to wonder about a candidate who had to feel the heat before he saw the light. How committed is he to the position? That's where I am with Rick Perry. Don't trust him.
No, well, I get that. Well, then you have another option, and that is candidate Michael Petchio. Born and raised in the state of Indiana, was in the Navy, has started his own construction firm, Image Makers LLC. Basically, he is a declared candidate, and he extols the virtues of big and small business for driving the American economy and providing for the prosperity of the working class. And again, folks, I'm reading this right off their bios off this website.
Right.
These are not endorsements in any way, shape, or form. But basically, that he says that he's a strong, he's a fiscal conservative, a strong supporter of Second Amendment rights, and wants to see a 28th Amendment passed to the Constitution, requiring any law passed by Congress must apply equally to senators and representatives as to the people they govern, as if it doesn't already.
I was going to say, why do you need an amendment?
Just need enforcement.
You need enforcement. And Congress specifically exempting itself? Yeah, that's unconstitutional.
Yeah, so, you know, Mr. Pett, you're already advocating for something that is unnecessary in the Constitution, so thank you for playing. our next candidate is one that everybody's talking about right now. He's the second candidate from the state of Florida, Marco Rubio, United States Senator. Now, Mr. Rubio is the other candidate we talked about that may be having a couple of issues in relation to meeting that qualification that Fox is putting up there, i.e. constitutionally qualified to serve.
Yeah, he's born here, and his I think his father was naturalized,
right.
Which I think puts him in.
It puts him on the right side.
So I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. I think that's one of those nuances. Born in the United States, father became an American citizen.
Yeah.
That kind of makes him a natural born citizen.
Right. So if you hear any of these issues coming up about Marco Rubio, you can say no. Constitutionally, he's solid. In relation to that, basically has spent a lot of time. He has worked on various campaigns. He was elected to the Florida House of Representatives, became the Speaker of the House, and then became the Senator for Florida back in, I believe, in 2010. That's, same year Rand Paul did.
Yeah.
So
during the Tea Party rumbling, that period.
So basically, he's supposedly a conservative candidate earning 100% rating from American Conservative Union. But we'll talk in a later program about ACU
and whether or not they're
really that conservative. Supports the flat federal tax rate, opposes capital gains tax. Basically, he's pro-life, opposes same-sex marriage, and stated there's no responsible way to use marijuana recreationally. In other words, leaving the door open to medical marijuana legalization. So there's that.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically you've got, and Rubio is, being from Florida, is a potential vote splitter with another Florida presidential candidate, Jeb Bush.
Yes.
And so that could, I would say for Jeb Bush, if he can weather the storm of having Marco Rubio in the race, having Donald Trump and his money in his mouth, and I mean, we'll talk about Donald here in a minute, Trump in the race with that end of it, and then having other governors in the race who actually probably have got better records than he does as far as their state goes, if Jeb Bush weathers all that, then it was definitely a GOPE fix.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Was Jeb Bush for Marco Rubio when he ran?
That's a good question.
As I recall, the answer was no. He was adamantly opposed. I think he was a Charlie Crist guy.
Oh, I think you're right. I think I remember.
And Charlie,
look
where Charlie Crist is these days. If you know anything about Florida politics and Charlie Crist turned coat. He went over to the Democrats.
Oh, absolutely. Well, he was a liberal to start.
He was a liberal. And I think Jeb Bush was pro Charlie Crist.
Okay. No. I've got it back here from 2010 that he actually formally endorsed Marco Rubio.
Okay. Okay. Pardon me.
Now they're basically having, you know, a flare up, obviously, because they're both running for the same office. And
yes.
Trying to beat each other
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. The next candidate, probably on the second 16 list, is Brian Russell, who is got a long shot bid. That's right. He's a 35-year-old entrepreneur and believes that, you know, since he started a business, he has what it takes to make sure the U.S. economy is on sound footing. I've started a business too, Chuck. You've started a business. Do we believe we have what it takes to run the entire United States
economy? I don't want the job.
I don't either. It's like, so he can have it if he'd like. That's not a problem. You know, and he basically is, you know, saying that all these things that are happening in Washington, D.C. is government overreach and incompetence, and you just need somebody in there and get his experience in to run for this office, to run the country. Really, he doesn't say much of anything else about what he believes in and what his background is. So if you want to take a look, I'm sure that there's going to be a link out there for Brian Russell.
I'm going to be quite honest. As we go along in this list, I'm seeing a lot of people who think the president has a lot more power than he has.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Including the top tier 16 candidates.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the current occupant of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Constitutionally, the presidential power is extremely limited. And these guys, I'm going to, as president, I will do this, I will do that. You'll do it if Congress passes the law. Otherwise, you won't do it. You know, this is one of the Jesse Ventura syndrome. You can run as a libertarian for governor and get elected. And when you've got both of the other major parties out for your scalp,
yeah,
you're not going to do anything.
Absolutely. Well, that leads us to our next candidate. Now we're getting into the home stretch here. Our next candidate is the former United States Senator from Pennsylvania, Rick Santorum, who has run at least once before, if not twice before, for the office of president, neither time actually winning the nomination. A lot of people, Chuck, especially among evangelical conservatives, like Rick Santorum. And I've heard him speak before. He is a very good public speaker.
Yeah.
He is very eloquent. You know, he shares his faith very quickly. And that's all great. My concern with Rick Santorum is, number one, Arlen Specter. Number two, Christy Todd Whitman.
Yeah.
Okay, why do these names, why do I associate these names with Rick Santorum? Because Rick Santorum, as a United States Senator, buckled into GOPE pressure and endorsed, personally, publicly endorsed, both Arlen Specter for re-election to his U.S. Senate seat when it was looking very close that he was going to be taken out of that seat by a social and fiscal conservative by the name of Pat Toomey. But Rick Santorum, at the request of the GOPE, including George W. Bush, publicly came out and endorsed and worked for Arlen Specter, a noted pro-abortion, pro-homosexual, liberal senator who then, after winning re-election, switched to the Democratic Party. He also endorsed, at the same bidding of the GOPE, Christy Todd Whitman, the former liberal governor of New Jersey.
Yep.
And supported her appointment to head the EPA.
That's right, EPA. I was trying to remember which agency she was appointed
to. Christy Todd Whitman, who was militantly pro-choice and militantly anti-faith.
And not only that, but a greenie.
And a greenie. So, you know what? You guys can go out and look up Rick Santorum and all of his great pro-family stuff. And, you know, he's staunch against gay rights and things of this nature. But the point is, when push came to shove for Rick Santorum, party was more important than principle. And positioning in the party was more important than principle. I cannot support, and I'm not calling to you, you got to make your own decisions, ladies and gentlemen. I cannot support a man who cannot stand up for what he says he believes in.
And he's selling a book.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on, because we still got a handful more and we're running out of time. Jefferson Sherman is our next candidate, a common sense leader, it says, declared for the Republican nominee, fiscal conservative, wants to limit government. Basically same thing. His three stated core goals are more jobs, better jobs, responsible, respectable foreign policy, and logical and practical government. Well, those all sound great, except they really don't say anything. And again, you know, and this website goes and explains some of the things that he's talking about here. Strong foreign policy, that we need to behave honorably, keep our word. We need to support our allies abroad, etc. You know what, ladies and gentlemen, that's great. But I don't really see where he's drawing himself out as having specific policy goals.
The only thing I can say is I don't think he'll be moving on up to the east side.
Okay, and coming into the very home stretch, our last three candidates, yes, that's right, we're down to the last three, is our second female candidate in the Republican presidential race, Shauna Sterling. Lives in Kentucky. So, you know, maybe your sister can give you some information if she happens to.
You never know.
She might have about this. Of course, we don't have any personal information about her, that she believes in God and his plans and intentions for humanity, and charges that the enemy of God wishes to destroy life. Okay, all right, that's fine. Opponent of the use of GMOs in foods, blames that for the childhood obesity epidemic. And since you're a biochemist, Chuck, I'll let you kind of wax eloquent on this whole thing.
I'm gonna GMOs are a bad deal, specifically because of the way that they're implemented, and it's probably a bad thing for food. However, is this a federal issue? It's only a federal issue insofar as the only reason there are GMOs is because the federal government has gotten involved and, right, and made it profitable for the companies that are using them. So this kind of centering on one issue, mm-hmm, she's getting attention for her issue.
Well, and she's got one other issue too, and I want to run this past you as it's written in here, and then tell me where the issue is on it. Sterling is strictly pro-life on abortion, arguing that even human zygotes born on U.S. soil are citizens of the United States and therefore cannot constitutionally be deprived of life without due process of law.
Zygotes aren't born.
Thank you. That's my right there it is. Be careful when you're trying to make a point not to try to overemphasize the point. Zygotes are not born.
No, it's a fertilized egg.
That's it.
And if you bore it, it would die.
That's right. That's right.
It would so be. If you gave birth to it, it would die. And the whole birthplace citizenship thing is a creation of the 14th Amendment.
Yes.
That was never the case until the 14th Amendment, and had more to do with a number of other issues, basically having to do with there were any ways you could become a citizen.
Okay. All right. And probably the most famous of the 16 top-tier candidates, the one who's drawing the most attention right now because he is who he is.
That's it.
And the one who is leading many of the polls right now is Donald John Trump. Donald John Trump, born in New York City, in Queens, he's a brand unto himself. And I mean that literally. Trump casinos, Trump towers, Trump Taj Mahal, you name it. His name is on probably as many buildings as a former U.S. Senator Robert Byrd from West Virginia has got his name on buildings. It's just incredible. But Donald Trump, a real estate developer and magnate, has decided once again to jump into the Republican thicket to run for president of the United States. And this time, Chuck, he's running as a pure populist.
Oh, definitely. Oh, absolutely. That's what he's running as. This is this whole thing. What's he doing? Well, really, does he expect to become president of the United States? I'll be quite honest. He expects to build his brand, which is Trump.
Yes.
Now, is he trying to influence things that may happen in the race? I think absolutely he is. And that's what a big part of the reason he's running. He wants to have some influence. Is Trump a conservative? No.
No, not in any way, shape,
or form. Not in any way, shape, or form. The article here talks about how he's talked about running as a Republican for president or as an independent. He's also talked about running as a Democrat. You have to remember he's from New York City, and getting elected as any kind of office holder in New York City as a Republican, you have a better chance of, being struck by lightning in a casino as you're collecting your $10 million prize.
Right, as Michael Bloomberg has found out.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Now, was Michael Bloomberg a Republican? Yeah, and so was Rudy Giuliani, but both of them basically ran as Democrats.
That's right. So, well, I mean, and Trump's running as a pure populist because
exactly.
He's going out there and he's firing off on every issue he can think of. And using the tactic that we said that the Republicans have been clamoring for years, which is when a liberal tries to corner you or tries to embarrass you, embarrass them back.
Fight back.
Fight back. And that's what Trump's doing. Now, if nothing else, if he can energize some of the other candidates like a Rand Paul or like a Ted Cruz or like a Marco Rubio to get out there and roll up the cuffs and really put on the gloves, hey, job well done, Donald. And I don't care if you decide then to jump and run for third party or to go and support Hillary Clinton, which you've done before.
Yeah,
you supported Hillary.
Uh-huh.
You're friends with the Clintons. So honestly, Chuck, sometimes I sit here and wonder if this isn't one of those little shadow operations like Clinton ran with Ross Perot in 1992.
Exactly.
We'll get the Donald's a friend of ours. We'll convince him that it's good for his brand and good for the for him to go in, mess with the Republicans, then jump out and run as third party to weaken them up so that Hillary can win the presidency.
Exactly. Interesting candidacy. Where it's going, anybody's guess.
That's it. Well, I'll tell you what, it's going on the main stage on Fox News.
They have no choice. He's at 24%.
He's leading them almost every poll. So, yeah. According to their criteria, unless they can find some wiggle room, he's going to be on the main stage, and he's probably going to make life miserable for a lot of people.
Very much so, especially the GOPE. I mean, yeah. He is making life miserable for them.
And one person that he's already turned his ire toward, and is our last candidate we're going to be talking about,
yeah.
is the current governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker. Walker has earned a lot of conservative cred by standing up to the labor unions in the state of Wisconsin. He has, however, been kind of a little less forthright on some of his social positions. Now, be that as it may, Scott Walker is probably one of the leading contenders for the nomination, along with a Jeb Bush, along with a, Marco Rubio type. Walker is one of the top tier guys. He was born in Colorado, and his family moved to Wisconsin when he was 10. He has he's been there. He's run businesses, and he became governor of Wisconsin in 2010. And again, really just basically hooked horns with the liberal labor unions in the state of Wisconsin, which is not a conservative state, by the way.
No, not by a lot. Okay, the home state of Robert La Follette, the head of the Progressive Republican Party.
Exactly.
And also, the litany is long. Wisconsin is a progressive state, has been since the whole entire progressive era, and continues to be. Essentially, a Marxist stronghold in the state is Madison, Wisconsin, which is the capital.
That's right.
And they really don't like Walker there. One of the problems you're going to run into that I see that Walker is a conservative simply because he stood up to the labor unions. Same thing you get with Chris Christie. He stood up to the labor unions, especially the teachers unions. In both cases, they had to.
Yes.
Their states were bankrupt. They could not afford the pay packages and pensions.
Well, Walker's state, they had a $3.6 billion budget shortfall, and he basically said the only way we're going to fix this is if we're going to reform collective bargaining and renegotiate this. Of course, the labor unions then created their hate relationship with him and actually put an initiative up to recall him. And it went to a vote. And he won
handily
by a 6.8% margin against the recall effort.
Which means even the progressives in Wisconsin are sick of it.
Absolutely. So,
is he a conservative?
Well, he's
a moderate on the conservative side.
Well, he opposes gay marriage, he says, and he says he's pro-life platform on abortion. Although I've seen a number of places where his responses to these questions are more nuanced than a movement conservative would be.
Look, this thing about rape and incest.
Yeah,
let's get over this. That's not a pro-life position.
That's not a pro-life position in any stretch of the imagination.
That's death penalty for the child.
Yep.
Not for the perpetrator.
And folks, if that's the only thing we leave you with today, that's the thing I want to leave you with, is if any of these supposedly pro-life candidates, and obviously George Pataki is not one of them. If any of these pro-life candidates come out and say that they're pro-life, but they believe in exceptions for rape and incest, they're not pro-life.
That's not
period.
A pro-life position.
They what they've done is they've found this comfortable middle ground that they know that the party regulars will take as their hat tip to them for abortion, and that many conservatives will swallow as being a pro-life position because they've been told that that's a pro-life position. No, it's not. Guys, the game's changing, especially on the life issue. Which of these 32 candidates are going to come out and stand fully and completely for the protection of life, for the protection of marriage, and for the protection of your pocketbook? That's really what it gets down to.
That's the question. And we're out of time. I want you to go out to www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And you can get the links out to the positions and the websites. We have a single link that we're going to put out, and that will lead you to the websites of these candidates where you can get more information than we've given you. We've gone through 32 candidates in 2 hours. That may sound like it's no big deal. Believe me, we just scraped the surface with that 2 hours. So if you have any questions, again, principledpolicy.com. You can send us an email, get in contact with us, and we ask that you join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.